Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It appears that the Pac-12 is the only Power 5 conference that is not playing college football. Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And that is the story that is circulating right now through the national sports world. It should be revealed by the end of the night that the Big Ten is going to return. Now, according to multiple reports, the Big Ten held a vote to bring back football, and it passed with relative ease. Those same reports are saying that the Big Ten would look to start the season around mid-October, and with that, they'd have to go to an 8-game all-conference schedule. That's what it would be looking like. And then in that regard, the College Football Playoff Committee could recognize them with a college football season, and then we'd be back to normal, right? That appears what's going to happen. Now we just look at the Pac-12. They're on deck. Pac-12's got to get moving here. Yesterday, it was reported that the most aggressive time frame would be November. That's too late. That's too late. If the Big Ten's going to return in mid-October, the Pac-12 needs to follow if we want a normal college football season. It was preposterous for both these conferences to cancel the season to begin with. You know, we've had 2 weeks of college football already. We got the third on the horizon. Yes, there has been some reports of COVID-19, but studies have indicated that there has been no widespread of COVID-19 in any area of the country where we are playing football. College and high school included. Now, the Pac-12 has got to fix this deal. If you're a Big Ten fan, that's great news. That's great news. We're going to have Big Ten football because, again, this was a conference that would absolutely play a factor into the college football playoff. This news apparently leaked due to a hot mic at a Big Ten conference. It's going to get done tonight. They're going to be back at it. Big Ten football should return mid-October. That's the big story out of college football. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition or if it even becomes official during Drive Time Sports. Let's take a look at some of the other national sports headlines, and we will begin in the NFL. The New York Jets had to place Le'Veon Bell on IR today with a hamstring injury. Things have just not been good for Le'Veon Bell since missing an entire season, holding out with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He went to the highest offer possible. That was the Jets. Last year was not good at all. And then this. He opened up training camp by saying he was going to have a career year. It wasn't good last Sunday, and now he's on the IR. The Jets have signed former Dolphins running back Kalen Ballage as well. The Jets tried to acquire him in a trade last month, but the deal was voided when he failed a physical because of a hamstring injury. Then he became a free agent. And that's where we're sitting right now. Now, under the new rules, Bell has to miss at least 3 games, meaning that he'll be eligible to come back week 5 against the Arizona Cardinals. And this move also comes a day after Adam Gase indicated that Bell could miss a couple of weeks because he was hurt on Sunday in the loss to Buffalo. And if you're really into fantasy football, expect the New York Jets to give a massive workload to 37-year-old Frank Gore, who got to see a few snaps, a few carries in this game on Sunday. The Jets also have a rookie on the depth chart as well, LaMichael Perrine. His status is uncertain because he sprained an ankle. So right out of the gate, not good news for the New York Jets. Again, Le'Veon Bell will go on the injured reserve for the next 3 weeks. There is some news coming out of Chicago as wide receiver Allen Robinson informed the team today that if they cannot reach an agreement on a new contract extension, he would like to be traded. He made a formal trade request in response to some stalled contract talks. He's only 27 years old. In the last season of a 3-year deal that he signed with the Bears back in 2018, he's going to earn $13 million in cash this year. But again, in the NFL, players are always looking for the for sure long-term deal. That's what they want. The Bears understand that Robinson's unhappy, but he's kind of taken the high road whenever pressed by reporters. I mean, this was a story, and I don't know how much you really care about the Chicago Bears, but this was a story that kind of floated under the radar in the offseason. Last year, he led the Bears with 98 catches. He went for over 1,100 yards. He had seven scores as well, and he played on one of the worst offenses. So, again, a story developing out of Chicago. Allen Robinson may be on the trade block relatively soon. Let's jump over to the NBA because we have Game 7 tonight, Denver and the Clippers. We'll talk about that in just a moment. We know that the Rockets will be looking for a new head coach after they were ousted by the Los Angeles Lakers in five games of the second round of the Western Conference Finals. Mike D'Antoni informed the Rockets he would not be back. I don't think there was a single Rocket fan that was upset about this news because, again, it was a head-scratcher from the beginning when the Rockets decided to give Mike D'Antoni the reins to this franchise. I mean, it was always about the defense. That was a problem. That was a problem under Kevin McHale. That was a problem under J.B. Bickerstaff. You bring in Mike D'Antoni to fix that? I don't think any Rocket fan is upset about this. However, the owner of the Houston Rockets, Tillman Fertitta, came out today, and he said that Daryl Morey's job is not in danger. And I'll tell you, for all the shortcomings of the Houston Rockets, I tip my hat to Daryl Morey several times because this guy thinks outside the box and he tries things. We knew going back before we had a stoppage in the season, we knew the Rockets were not going to contend for an NBA championship. We knew this with the roster that was currently constructed. What did he do? He shipped out Clint Capella, brought in Robert Covington, and they just tried to mix things up. They were going to beat everyone with small ball. Now, it didn't work out, but Daryl Morey is that aggressive type of general manager where if you are a Rocket fan, you understand that your franchise is trying to win at all times, as long as Daryl Morey is there. Basketball savvy? I think he's analytical savvy. And again, you know my take on analytics if you listen to the show enough. Those only go so far. Right? You can't be all analytical driven. It's one of the problems that I have when I'm listening to a Utah Jazz basketball game. It's one of the problems I have. Everything is analytically drawn out. That doesn't necessarily translate into victories. Right? Moneyball and Major League Baseball, how many World Series championships has Billy Beane won? It tells part of the story. And I think that's where Daryl Morey has his shortcomings. But for the Rockets owner to step up and say, this guy is coming back next season, I'm curious to see what direction Morey goes from a coaching standpoint, knowing that he has one of the worst contracts in the league right now in Russell Westbrook, and he's got James Harden, who is in his prime right now. You better figure something out quick. I like the fact that Houston's going to bring back Daryl Morey. Now, again, as I said, tonight, Game 7, we get the Nuggets and the Clippers. This is the most interesting game of the entire bubble. Up to this point in time, it is the most interesting game. High expectations for the Clippers all season long. The Clippers had some struggles with Dallas in the opening round, right? They're a call away, a Kristaps Porzingis injury away from really, are they getting out of the first round? That was that compelling of a series. Then it looks like they're just going to roll the Denver Nuggets, and then they blow two double-digit leads in potential closeout games, and the Nuggets have been in this Game 7 situation before. This Clipper team is not. This is an interesting game. 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN. It can't overshadow Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. We get Miami and Boston. Start time for this game is set for 4:40 p.m., so that's coming up here in about 30 minutes. We'll get Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals cannot take place until Friday, so the East is going to have a jump, all because the Clippers can't close out the Nuggets. I really don't know what direction I'm going in this game tonight either. I could see it going a variety of different ways. I'm done counting out the Denver Nuggets. I've learned my lesson on that. Done it way too much. Let's take a quick commercial break. Here's what we have coming up on the show today from a local perspective. We're going to talk to Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans. Yesterday, the RPI rankings came out. Emory number 7. You can get the complete write-up on that at CastleCountryRadio.com. We'll talk to Coach Famala about the RPI. We'll talk about last week's loss to JUAB and the Region 12 opener, which is at home this Friday against Grand. We're also going to talk to Harvey Howard of the Desert Thunder Raceways, the track manager down there. They have an event that has never taken place before. They have a demolition derby this Saturday at the Desert Thunder Raceway. We didn't get the Carbon County Sheriff's Search and Rescue Demolition Derby this last summer. So if you got the itch to watch cars destroy one another, we have one locally coming up this Saturday. And we'll continue to talk NBA basketball. We'll look at the Major League Baseball season as well. That's all straight ahead right here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. We're live from the Auto Farm Studios, and we're back in just a moment.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
During that last commercial break, you heard the RPI rankings for football. Those were released yesterday, and Emory High School getting some love. Number 7 in the 3A classification. They have played the most difficult schedule up to this point in time. 2 losses out of their 3 to teams inside the top 3. Stellar non-region schedule. Now the Spartans will gear up for their first region game of the year, and that'll take place on Friday against the Grand Red Devils right here on KOAL. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have head coach John Famalo over the phone right now. Coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, not a problem. Appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. And we can start by talking about this past Friday, the final non-region game of the season. This goes against JUAB, one of the top teams in the state. We knew it was going to be a tough task going in. The final score is 44-0, Coach, but I think maybe even more important, it's your takeaways from it. What did you see in this game, and what were some of the things that you can say, okay, we can use this moving forward?
Boy, hard to say. I mean, I think one thing our kids competed. One thing we learned is against good teams, we can't play behind the sticks. You know, we can't be second and long and, you know, third and long. It's just, you know, against good teams. So, I mean, that's one thing we got to learn. We got to get better at is being more efficient on first downs, second downs, to get manageable third downs. And against good teams, you know, they're not going to let you break a whole lot of tackles. And so you got to just take what they can give you and, you know, hopefully move the chains as you move along. And so that's probably the biggest takeaways from us is, you know, against good teams, we just can't get behind the stick. We got to be efficient. We got to be better that way. And that's our focus this week is making sure that, again, we manage the game plan, that we can move methodically and, you know, try to keep the ball in our hand as much as we can. And, you know, we limited that for the fact that we had to throw a little bit more. And, you know, they played down disciplined defense and, you know, put us in situations that, you know, we're not real good at right now.
Yeah, Coach, in this game, and I don't know if you felt the same way, but I thought at the end of the first quarter, JUAB had 2 possessions. And in my mind, I mean, it's 10-0. I know you're behind on the scoreboard, but I felt pretty good about where the team was. I mean, that was a success in itself, keeping that offense, limiting them to just 2 offense possessions in the first 12 minutes. I thought that was a big positive in this game.
Yeah, I thought, you know, defensively we were pretty sound that first quarter. I say we held the field goal the first drive, you know, the second drive. Kids snuck out, you know, on the flat, missing the assignment there, and, you know, you're still supposed to score a touchdown. So 10-0, and I honestly felt good at that point, too, feeling like hopefully offensively we could get a score, get ourselves back in it. But, you know, it just didn't happen that way. But, you know, defensively I thought we were good at times and, you know, against a really good physical team. Again, we talk about flipping the field, too. You know, we played on our side of the field that whole first half of, you know, we've gone down 24-0. I'd have felt a whole lot better than the 31, but that's what happened.
Coach, no Jace Curtis in this game, no Josh Olson in this game, and so the offense did look a little bit different. We knew both these guys are massively important to this offense, but it was definitely, I mean, it was viable. It was right there. I mean, it was a visual, I guess, a visual reference to just how important those two guys really are to what this team wants to do offensively.
Yeah, they're a big part of what we do. Both kids, again, they give you big play capabilities, and, you know, they can break plays. And so if you don't have that threat, it's one of those, again, you got to be really methodical about how you move the ball, and you can't get behind the sticks because 3rd and 10, if you don't have that explosion, it makes it a little bit tougher to, you know, get first down. And so, again, missing those 2 kids was big, but gave some other kids opportunities to step up. You know, I wish we got a better look at Jarek. He ended up getting a concussion, so that made it a little bit tougher because, you know, now we're down to 2 back, had to move Jace Mangum back there. And, you know, he played well for us on both sides of the ball. So I was happy about that. But the kid just, never played two back, but we took him back there, and he ran hard, and, you know, it's good to see him have a good game.
Yeah, as far as Jace is concerned, Jace Mangum, coach, he kind of gave a vibe that, boy, he could be really effective in between the guards offensively if you guys want to really pound it up the middle.
Yeah, I mean, he's a kid that doesn't have a problem lowering his shoulders, hard as tackle, and, you know, he just hasn't had a ton of reps there, but when he touches the ball and he gets north and south, he's a load to bring down.
Defensively in this game, once again, it seemed like we called Hayes Dalton's name an awful lot, coach. I thought at times the defensive line actually did get a decent push, but again, this is a team that can beat you in so many ways. And so when I look at it, what Juab can bring offensively, 3 to 4 guys deep, it seemed like at every position, that's hard for a smaller 3A team to contend with. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, you look, they were efficient on how they subbed. I mean, they subbed about 4 or 5 kids in, and, you know, and they come fast at you. So you got to get a line quick. But, you know, they're a pretty physical team, and they're deep. And so, you know, we just got to game plan a little bit better and get teams like that and be better that way. But, you know, that's a good team right there.
Again, Coach John Famolo, our guest right now with the Emory Spartan football team. Coach, there is excitement this week because the first RPI rankings are released. And again, this is what we go by now. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I hate to say it, but it doesn't really matter if you win a region championship. I mean, you have to perform well enough where the RPI recognizes it. And now with a record of 2-3, losing 2 games to 2 top 3 teams in the state, the Spartans come out number 7 in the first RPI rankings. That's a great spot to be in.
Yeah, I mean, we're happy to be in 7. Like I say, there's still a lot of games to play, but to be where we're at, we knew we'd have a tough preseason, and so that, you know, that kind of helps with the ranking and the RPI, and so we're still fortunate to be at 7, but, you know, I think there's still a lot of games to be played and a lot of movement's going to happen, and so, but, you know, I'm happy where we're at right now.
Yeah, Coach, you and I had a long conversation about the way the schedule was constructed for the non-region portion of the season. And as it sits right now, you guys have played the toughest schedule in all of 3A. The way it was put together, I mean, it's really beneficial for this team. Plus, you logged a couple of victories in the process.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the thinking going behind it. You know, I knew we'd have some tough games, but with the RPIs, you know, hopefully it helps you and doesn't hurt you when you play really good teams and possibly lose to them. But it gives you an opportunity to see where you stand. But at the same time, I think, you know, it helps you in the long run when you get to, you know, region play and then hopefully playoffs, that you play some tough teams and know what they have. And, you know, and it helps your RPI ranking at the same point.
Now we move forward. We talk about Friday, the region opener, and Coach Grand is a team that has not won a game yet this season. Region 12 is kind of split into two halves. I mean, there are 3 teams in the top 10. There are 3 teams in the bottom 15 of the RPI. And so just looking at the way the region has kind of been split over the course of 5 games, this is a very winnable game, a game that I'm sure your guys expect to come out on top, being that it is the region opener and it's at home against a Grand squad that maybe is a little down this year.
Yeah, they're a little down, but, you know, I watched film on them. They're really a physical team, you know, and they're one of those teams you got to make sure you tackle, and they're going to send 3 or 4 guys on the edge. And, you know, if we don't get an edge set and we don't get the kids on the ground, you know, they're gonna take 5 yards at a time and continue to take clock. And, you know, I'm assuming that's their game plan. So if we can get them predictable downs, 3rd and long, but I think that helps us with that, you know, a lot more. But we let this team come in here and, you know, take a bunch of clock and move the ball down the field and score, we're gonna have a long night. You know, I'm not downplaying how, you know, good or bad they are based off their experience, but we got to show up to play.
Yeah, there's no question. And as you mentioned, eating large chunks of clock, they have a couple of kids that can run the football. I mean, if it's Ryland Jones, he's averaging about 6 yards per carry. Or if it's Dylan Harrison, he's averaging about 5 yards per carry. Those are numbers you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, and that's the key. Again, they get a lot of bodies at you. And like I say, if you don't get in that backfield and or get through blocks instead of an edge, you know, those kids are going to get yards and yards and chunks. And so, you know, that's what's going to happen.
They do have a couple of other playmakers, coach, but when you look at what they want to bring to the table from the offensive side of the ball, where can you see an obvious advantage in which you guys can take advantage of?
I think the biggest thing for us is just we've got to execute better. Like I say, our focus this week is our first downs. I mean, if we can be second and five, you know, third and two, you know, that's going to be our focus. I don't know if we're necessarily looking for big plays. I think we should be able to run on these guys, and that's a big emphasis this week as well. We got to establish a run. If we don't do that, you know, that's going to be tough. But you know, and then we got to put points on the board. We can't just move between the 20s. We got to be efficient in the red zone. And so, those are kind of the three keys for us offensively to be able to beat this, to win this game.
Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence that the two games where the offense has played really, really well this year, you guys managed to establish the run game early.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole key to us. I mean, again, even though we're spread, I think if you can't run the ball, you can't, you know, manipulate the box to be able to make easier reads for your quarterback and allow your receivers to make plays, then it makes it a lot tougher. And that's what you guys do see. You know, they put six in the box and they make you throw on the edges if you can't get separation or you can't get guys open. You know, it makes for a long night.
Coach, this week at practice, have you noticed Monday, I guess yesterday, we can say in practice, did you notice any difference in this team, or did they respond pretty well to a beating on the road?
You know, for the most part, I think these kids, they're focused. They're looking ahead. Again, nobody likes a loss, but I think at the end of the day, these kids are looking forward to region play and getting our feet back under us and moving forward. So, you know, I think it's business as usual for these kids, and you know, I think they're raring and ready to go.
I think it's always easier to bounce back from a loss when you've experienced some success in consecutive weeks. I mean, you win two games in a row. These kids know what that feels like, so I'm sure it is a little bit easier for them to have some pip in their step when they get to practice.
Yeah, I think some kids have, you know, they put a lot of work into this season, and so I think the kids are, you know, win or lose, I think they just want to continue to compete and play, and, you know, there's some opportunities ahead that they're looking forward to, and so, you know, I think that's the biggest key for our kids to stay focused on moving forward and moving ahead.
Coach, you did talk about the injury to Jarek McDonald, again, the concussion, but as far as Jace Curtis, Jarek, and Josh Olson go, what are their status, and do we have any other injuries that we have to pay attention to this Friday?
I think for the most part we should have Josh back on a limited basis, probably play more defense. You'll see him on offense as well. I think Jace Curtis will be back. I think his knee's feeling better. So, Jarek, he's in concussion protocol, so I'm not sure. He's got to get clearance from doctors, so he may be a couple weeks out. But I think for the most part, the rest of our guys are healing and getting back. So, you know, we're in a good position right now.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time. I'm looking forward to Friday's game. Thank you so much, and we'll see you at the game on Friday.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach John Fumalo with the Emory Spartan football team. Do not forget Emory and Grand coming up this Friday. Live coverage will begin at 6:30. Kickoff will follow shortly after at 7. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll continue on with the local sports front, but we're going to talk auto racing. Sort of. This Saturday, we have a demolition derby coming up here in the Castle Country area. We'll talk about that when we return. Plus, we have some more NFL and NBA talk to get to in just a bit right here on Drive Time Sports.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave.
Continuing on with the local sports front, Saturday should be an interesting night here in the Castle Country because we have a demolition derby taking place. A little later than we typically do, but this one, it's going to be unlike anything that we've ever had at the Desert Thunder Raceway. We're going to talk about everything that's happening at the raceway and more right now as track manager Harvey Howard is joining us over the phone. And Harvey, it's great to catch up with you again. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Thank you for making the time for us.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate it.
Well, it's great to talk to you again. I know we've had another set of races at the raceway since the last time you and I talked. How have things been going this 2020 season with the raceway?
You know, they've been going great. Shane has done a tremendous job. The facility's growing. He's put a ton of money into expanding it, spectator-wise and participant-wise, and we got a lot to look forward to. Actually looking forward to possible groundbreaking on the new drag strip probably sometime late October. So looking to maybe see that done in the spring.
It's really interesting the way you guys are expanding things at the raceway, and it's a perfect segue, I think, into what we're going to talk about today, and that's a demolition derby, which is coming up this Saturday. This was really, nobody could have really have foreseen this. I mean, 2 to 3 years ago, right? I'm in a drag strip, and now we're talking a demolition derby. It's a true testament to just how versatile it's becoming at the raceway.
Right, and you know, that's the goal with the Desert Thunder Foundation. The whole system was set up as a nonprofit foundation to benefit Carbon County. And it looks like that's exactly where it's going. But the first thing that we need to do is build the facility. Drag strip, off-road truck, race course, all kinds of stuff that is being planned right now. And put into motion.
Well, let's talk about the derby itself. There's a lot that goes into it, Harvey. A lot of stuff that's as far as putting together classes, putting together the competition, everything that's happening. It takes a lot to put this whole event together. So what has it been like being the track manager and putting together a demolition derby?
Well, we've like you said, it takes a ton of work, and you've got to have everything just right. There's always things that maybe you miss or something, but what we've done is we've built an arena that is about 340 feet long by 98 feet wide, right on the front straightaway of the racetrack. That kind of gives you perspective how big the racetrack actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could actually fit a full football field right in this demolition derby arena that we've got put together. It's going to be a big deal. There's tons to do, and these guys have stepped up. Being a manager's, you know, not that big a job. You know, if you've got guys around you that know what they're doing, and Shane and Dennis have done a good job putting things together. Rules. We've got a stock class for the demolition derby. We've got a truck class for the demolition derby, and we got a mini class for the demolition derby. And basically what they did is they took some general rules from all around the state of Utah and the western U.S. and put some easy things together. And it looks like we're going to have a bunch of cars. We've got over 30 stock class cars signed up. We've got over 20 at the last count in the truck class. And the mini class is kind of dragging along, but we've actually got over 7 of them now signed up too. So I think it's going to be a big deal. We're going to have a bunch of heat races. I call them heat races. I don't know what you'd call them, heat crashes. And then we'll set up the main events. We got Mad Dog trophies. We got prizes, everything like that. It still is open. So if anybody wants to, you know, pull their derby car out that maybe they had a few years ago or whatever, do a few things, look at the rules, bring it out and run it. So we've still got room for more cars if you want to come out.
Yeah, you talk about the different heats. So as far as the classes and the heats and everything that's going into this Saturday night, I know the action is going to begin at 7, Harvey. How long do you guys anticipate that this event will last?
We are hoping to keep it moving fast. We got a ton of help. As far as wreckers and tractors and backhoes and everything to move the cars quick once they have crashed. So we are absolutely goal to get it over by 10 o'clock. We want this thing to move and move quick and get it over with so people can get back home to their kids or whatever. I mean, you need to be bringing your kids to a demolition derby. That's part of what the big deal is. And the kids love this stuff. And you know, we're wanting to try and get you out of there by 10, and get you back home. We've got concessions. Them guys been doing an awesome job this year on concessions, and just you know, want everybody to eat when they get out there and have a good time.
Again, Harvey Howard, the Desert Thunder Raceway track manager, our guest right now as we talk about Saturday's Demolition Derby. I know Demolition Derbies are a big deal here in the Castle Country, and we did not have the Carbon County Sheriff's Search and Rescue this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And so for you guys to get something like this off and rolling, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of familiar names here locally. Guys that we don't necessarily see at the Desert Thunder Raceway racing on nights, but still, Harvey, what is it looking like as far as the local involvement from drivers in Saturday's event?
We've got quite a bit of local involvement. Just honestly, most of our involvement is from outside of the area, bringing people in. And, you know, that's good for our economy, good for everything. But we do have a bunch of local involvement. A lot of the drivers that I'm hearing the names of, I recognize them from derbies in past years. And, you know, it's getting exciting as we get closer to see that come out. You know, we had a bunch of guys when the local derby got canceled. It was like our phones were ringing off the hook sometimes. Just, you know, you guys should put this on. We've got a car. We got this. We got that. You know, give us some place to run our car. And basically that's what the foundation has done. They stepped up. They've done that. They're putting it on, and you know, with it being a nonprofit foundation, that money goes back into this community in one way or the other. No matter what it's doing. So, come on out, support the foundation, and have a good time.
Harvey, let's talk prices. Again, 7 o'clock is when it begins, but the gates are going to open at 5. It is first come, first serve for all the seats, so you want to make sure you get out there early. What are the prices for this weekend?
Yeah, adults this weekend, and remember, it's a nonprofit foundation, so the prices are going to be a little bit higher, but that's $17 for an adult. It's $12 for kids 6 to 12, and under 6 is free.
Fantastic. Again, the Desert Thunder Raceway playing host to their first Demolition Derby coming up. I guess it's the first. I know you guys have done some interesting things in the past, but have you ever had a full-on Demolition Derby?
No, we had a Circle Derby.
Right, I remember the Circle Derby. Right.
They derbied around the racetrack, but never a full-on arena Demolition Derby. This is the first time we've done it, and depending on how well it goes, it may be the last time, but you know, we're doing everything we can to make it a big deal for this year.
Harvey, lastly, before I let you go, I'll give you the mic. I'll let you invite everybody out again to the first Demolition Derby at the Desert Thunder Raceway this Saturday.
Okay, yeah, we appreciate everybody's support for the foundation and where we're going with it. And, it's going to become a big deal. It's going to become a bigger deal than what a lot of people in Carbon County are seeing right now. And there's a lot of money being put into the facility, and we need everybody's support out there to help further that along. And, appreciate anybody that can build a car and come out. Pit passes are $25, and if you know somebody that's got a car, come in with them or get a pit pass and just go in the pits. So there's no limit on that. And, just invite everybody out. It's been a good thing being involved with these, the new owner and the foundation. And I'm proud of the direction that they're going. So, come on out this Saturday. It's going to all start up about 7. Gates will open about 5. So get there early and have a good time.
Harvey, it's a pleasure to get you back on the air. Thank you so much for making time for us again, and best of luck this weekend.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate you guys.
Harvey Howard talking about this Saturday, Demolition Derby taking place at the Desert Thunder Raceway. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll move to the national scene right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Back on Drive Time Sports, one of those days where 1 hour just simply is not enough. Bringing Travis Anderson as we help to help close out this show. Travis, last night we had two Monday Night Football games. We had the Steelers and the Giants, and the Steelers looked good. It was great to see Juju have a quarterback that could get him the ball. I've been very harsh on Ben Roethlisberger over the last few years. In fact, I made the prediction that Ben Roethlisberger would never start another playoff game in a Steelers uniform. I said that like 3 years ago. And so far, that prediction has held true. Although, when you look at this division, and I look at the way Roethlisberger looked last night, I think there's some optimism that should be had in Pittsburgh right now. I think Ben Roethlisberger is healthy, 21 of 32, 229, three touchdowns. But again, it was great to see Juju have a quarterback to get him the ball. He took full advantage of that last night. Six catches, took two in for a touchdown, did not drop a single pass. Six catches on six targets.
Yeah, with that extra wild card spot now with the expanded playoffs, I think Pittsburgh's one of those teams that might sneak in now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I still think that they're not at Baltimore's level.
No, not with Kansas City, Baltimore.
No. But I mean, anytime a Mike Tomlin team seems to have some cohesion, they tend to do good things during the regular season. Now, we can jump to the final Monday night game. We had the Titans and the Broncos. And for the life of me, I cannot figure out why Vic Fangio did not use his timeouts late in this game. It's mind-boggling. I have no idea what Fangio was thinking. If you're a Bronco fan, you were probably screaming and yelling at the TV. He finally uses a timeout with, what, 2 seconds left in the game?
Yeah, with 2 seconds left. So, yeah, that one's on him. That's a game Denver has to win, take advantage of all the missed field goals that Tennessee and Gostkowski had. Yeah. So, I don't know what Fangio is doing. Can't figure it out for the life of me. He should have used those timeouts when Tennessee had the ball. Leave yourself a minute 20 left. Get yourself in field goal range.
Gostkowski misses three kicks and an extra point.
It was horrible.
And oh, man. Yeah. He made the one that counted.
And they won, yeah.
He made the one that counted. I mean, if you're a Titans fan, you can look past the fact that Gostkowski had missed his first three kicks. He made the one that counted. And Denver comes out on the losing side of the scoreboard. Yeah, look, this is an instance where the old saying is players win, coaches lose. I will say constantly on the show, I always take it for the coach, and I rarely do I go after officials. To me, it's typically on the players. This was not on the players last night.
No,
this was Vic Fangio who cost his team this game last night, no question. And it wasn't just the final 2 minutes, Travis. It was like the final 6 minutes of game management
was
insane.
The fourth quarter was just poorly managed by Vic Fangio, so that one's on him. That's why Denver's 0-1, because of that guy.
And they are the only team in the AFC West without a victory. I don't think the Broncos are a playoff team to begin with, but when you're borderline, when you're a 6-10 team, you know, and I think that we can agree, 5-11, 6-10, let's say 6-10 for the Broncos. That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. During the course of a 6-10 season, you're going to have opportunities to eke out games and turn 6-10 to 8-8. And with the expanded playoffs, 8-8 may get you in.
Yeah, that was last night.
This is a game that's going to hurt them.
Yeah, if Denver's out like one game or two, you can look back and say, well, we didn't make the playoffs because we lost opening night to Tennessee.
In a game in which they had no business.
No, Tennessee was terrible.
Yeah. That's week one. Biggest takeaway for you in week one was what?
I think everybody's overlooking the Rams.
That's still what you're rolling with, huh?
It's still people are talking that the Rams weren't a good football team, and they're going to prove a lot of people wrong.
Well, it'll be telling because they get Philadelphia coming up next week.
I don't think they know how good Philadelphia is, though.
I don't know how good they are either, but you got to go on the road and beat Philly, and I don't think that that's going to be an easy thing to do. I will tell you, for me, the best story, it was Washington. This was the best story of week one for me because the Washington football team went through one of the craziest off seasons you will ever see. Right, I mean, this has been one thing after another for the Washington football team. And then you have Ron Rivera going through his issues. He has to get an IV at halftime. Dwayne Haskins gives the speech. They score 24 and answered, come back and beat the Eagles 24-17. It was the best story of week one.
Yeah, Ron Rivera, he's the man, dude.
He's a great man.
He's a good coach.
He's a great man. And for everything that employees of that organization, it's not just players, not just the coaches.
It's the whole thing, yeah.
Anyone working under Dan Snyder, everything they went through in the offseason, I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful story for week one. I thought Aaron Rodgers, I know you're not a big discount double check guy.
He was good.
He was spectacular.
Yeah, Green Bay is going to be a team in the NFC that you're going to have to watch because I think they're going to be a problem.
to me, those were the two biggest stories. And I'm not straying away from you saying the Rams at all, because, again, I do believe the Rams are better than what many experts believe. But for me, it was Washington, because that was the story of the week. Aaron Rodgers looked phenomenal. It was great to see. You draft a quarterback in the first round. This guy is motivated. And then if I look at the AFC, probably Ben Roethlisberger as well. I mean, to me, I thought he looked good. And that was a big question mark going into the season. What's Big Ben going to look like? I thought he looked just fine. So those were some of the biggest takeaways for me in week one.
Yeah, Cam Newton was good too.
Yeah. Cam Newton was okay. He was okay. That Patriot team, I mean, what, they walk away with a 21-11 win.
Defensively, there's a lot of guys, though, with the COVID thing. I just don't think it's going to last throughout the season.
I don't think so.
So many guys defensively out.
Yeah, I don't think so. Buffalo's the front runner in that division.
And they didn't play well, and they dominated the Jets. Buffalo did not play well at all.
And they still won.
And they still won handily. So.
Yeah. And I don't care who it's against. It's an NFL football team.
Yeah, you take the ups and downs with Allen.
Let's end with this. Tonight, Game 7. Western semis, who you take in Denver or the Clippers?
I'm going Denver. I think the pressure on the Clippers is going to get to them. Nuggets can play loose. They can play free. All the pressure, like the Joker said, is on the Clippers, and I'm rolling with Denver. I think the momentum is riding high.
All the pressure's on the Clippers. When it comes down to Game 7, though, I typically ride with the team that has the best player in the game, and there's no question the Clippers have Kawhi Leonard. He's the best player in the series, hands down, not even close. They're going to have to ride Kawhi heavily tonight. I think the Clippers win by double digits. I'm gonna go with the Clippers. We get the Lakers and Clippers series. Now, with that being said, if the Nuggets win, I'm not going to sit here tomorrow and say, oh my gosh, I am completely stunned. Because I agree with you. All the pressure is on the Clippers.
And this group hasn't played well together all season.
No, they haven't.
And they've never been in a situation where it's a must win.
And they haven't played well in the bubble. I mean,
no.
They struggled with the Mavericks.
They can't shoot the ball.
I'm going to go with the Clippers just because they have Kawhi Leonard. I think they're the better team. We'll talk about this on tomorrow's show. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.